With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom? Let me tell you about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions that you wish to ask. And then she can either type a response or use their voice-to-text feature, and MyLifeInABook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and stories for eternity. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges she overcame. This book becomes a legacy. It's something that you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. And this is something that Ethan and I had been thinking about doing with our parents. We have this podcasting equipment, so we wanted to find a way for them to tell their story. But I love this because it's so regimented. They send them a question every week, and it just makes it really easy and turnkey. And it just seems like a great way for us to get our parents' stories down so that our children and our children's children can have them. So if you're interested, check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code ATTWG at checkout for 15% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com and use code ATTWG for 15% off today. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, you can build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic, personalized closet. And the styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. So I've been using Armoire, and I'm actually wearing one of their shirts right now as I'm recording this, and it's a great idea. You don't have to commit to buying the clothes, but you can really start to explore your own personal style. Like if there's a trend or something that you've been wanting to maybe try but not commit to, this is absolutely perfect. Because if you don't like it, you just put it back in the bag and get something else. Because we've all been there. You open your closet, and even though it's packed, you feel like you have nothing to wear. And with Armoire, that's a thing of the past. They make it effortless for all women to turn heads with stylish everyday looks. You can rent high-quality designer clothing for any occasion, and it's all tailored to your personal style. Plus, you don't have to do laundry, and you don't have to go shopping. It truly could not be any easier. And right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month, which is up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/ATTWG. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/ATTWG to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today. Are you ready to lose weight? With Effecty, getting access to powerful GLP-1 weight loss medications has never been easier or more affordable. Effecty offers compounded semaglutide, the same active ingredients as the popular name brands, but for up to 80% less. These medications work by regulating appetite and blood sugar, helping you lose weight in a sustainable, science-backed way. Getting started is so simple. Just fill out a short medical questionnaire, then connect with a licensed provider through a quick chat-based telehealth consultation. If you're eligible, your prescription gets shipped straight to your door. No hassle, no waiting rooms. With transparent pricing, no hidden fees, and no membership required, Effecty is committed to making proven weight loss treatments accessible to everyone. Effecty gave me the opportunity to try their service out, and I have to say, it is just as easy as they say it is. I filled out the questionnaire, and within days, a package arrived at my door filled with everything I needed and detailed instructions. Their website also tells you everything you need to know, and you can always chat with your healthcare provider. It really is that simple and convenient. So if you're ready to level up your weight loss game, my listeners can now get $50 off of GLP-1 weight loss treatments at Effecty.com with code ATTWG at checkout. That's Effecty.com, EFFECTY.com, and use the code ATTWG to get $50 off your first month of GLP-1 weight loss treatment. No hassles, no memberships, and no hidden fees. So get started today. Yes. It's the day after Valentine's Day in 2019, and Leah Croucher is walking to work as usual. But the 19-year-old Milton Keynes, Buckinghamshire, England resident never makes it to the office. At first, it looks as though Leah may be a victim of a stranger abduction. But as police investigate, they find that Leah has been displaying out-of-character behavior in the days and weeks leading up to her disappearance. Could Leah's secrets have led to her disappearance? 3 years after she was last seen, her family, investigators, and internet sleuths are all trying to figure out if Leah walked away on her own or if she was betrayed by someone close to her. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell the stories of those who never came home. Today, I want to tell you the story of Leah Croucher. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you for joining us once again. And yes, as you just pointed out, this is our first case from England.
Oh my God, you're not really going to include that in
the... No, because I don't want to hear it again, much less subject our poor listeners to it. Yeah, so most of our listeners obviously are from the US, as you would probably guess, but UK comes in at number two.
Really?
Yeah, just over 6% of all of our listeners come from the UK.
That's really mind-blowing.
Yeah, I know.
Well, then I will not subject our listeners to any more terrible fake British accents.
Yeah, just it might be a hate crime, honestly. You know, we are back. I'm happy to report that we have gotten over COVID for the most part, although we are both freaking exhausted.
Yeah, that's definitely like a long COVID thing.
Yeah. There. Like, I feel fine. I felt fine for quite a while, but like, and honestly, my symptoms were extremely mild. But just so tired.
Yeah, and it comes on really quickly.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, I'll be going and going at like 100% and I'm feeling great. And then I just hit a wall. And I'm exhausted and I cannot recover.
Yeah. Yeah. It's weird because like sometimes I can a little bit and then it just like goes downhill again. So I don't know. But anyway, so yeah, so we are back. We are recording. We're doing it. You know, before we get started on this week's episode, I do want to go ahead and also thank our newest Patreon members, Sharon S., Casey, Taylor, Rebecca S., Sierra S., and Kelly F. Thank you all so very much.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Let's get to the story. Leah Croucher was born on August 14th, 1999 to John and Claire Croucher in Milton Keynes. John had been married previously and had two children from that marriage, Jade and Hayden. The three siblings grew up together, though, and they considered themselves to be, you know, just like normal, like full siblings, not half siblings or anything like that. They were, you know, they're all just very close, with Hayden and Leah being especially close. So Hayden is her brother. He is, I believe, the middle child, and he was about 4 years older than Leah. Leah was a bit of a homebody. She loved Harry Potter and Twilight and stuff like that. She had friends, but, you know, few boyfriends, like, didn't, she had dated, but not a whole lot. Had never been in a serious relationship. In 2019, she was 19 years old and was, you know, done with high school and was living at home and working as an admin at a finance company. She was social, but not much of a partier. Leah's mom, Claire, for instance, said that they had to, like, basically force her to go to a pub to celebrate her 18th birthday, and which is the drinking age in England. From what it sounds like, she's like, okay, fine, I will go to a pub, but it's like, no party, just the family. Like, we're just going to go have dinner. Like, that's it. And so that's what they did.
I mean, I couldn't wait to have my first beer with my dad, like, out in public, I should say.
To throw your dad under the bus like that.
he doesn't listen to this.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I never really thought about it, honestly.
No, it was like a huge deal for me to, you know, sit at a bar with my dad when I was 21. So that's interesting.
Yeah, that was not a big deal to me, I guess. I don't know. I mean, I do remember that my first legal drink when I was 21 was one of those, like, giant fishbowl margaritas from Ruby Tuesdays that had, like, the Swedish fish in them. They were, like, blue. Oh my God, do you not remember those?
No, that sounds disgusting.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm sure it was, but at the time, it was great.
Gross.
Leah's father, John, is a Taekwondo instructor, and I believe he actually has his own business. And Leah and her brother, Hayden, also practice the discipline at Stuart B. Taekwondo Club. So again, I think that her dad actually owns Stuart B. Taekwondo Club. Leah excelled at this, and she ended up earning her black belt and became an instructor herself.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah. I'm not sure if Leah knew how to drive or not, but I do know that she did not have her driver's license. You know, she didn't have her license, didn't have a car. So don't know if she knew how, didn't know how, whatever it was. But she mainly got around by walking around Milton Keynes's many footpaths, or, you know, by getting rides with, like, family and friends, or taking taxis if she needed to. In fact, walking was how Leah commuted to and from work. The journey was about 2 miles, and there are several different ways to get there from her house. Milton Keynes was created by the UK government in the 1960s as part of an effort to relieve housing congestion in London by just basically, like, creating these small towns, you know, in the vicinity, you know, where there was just farmland or whatever, you know, to make people kind of move out a little bit more and get out of London.
So it was basically them forcing suburban sprawl.
I mean, yeah, for the most part.
On the countryside.
So yeah, Milton Keynes was about 50 miles outside of London, and it was the largest town in this whole project that the government had. It spans about 22,000 acres with a population of around 230,000. So because the whole point of it was to relieve congestion, Milton Keynes was actually built with walkability in mind. And the town has an extensive network of paths that are used for foot traffic and, you know, cyclists and things like that. So it's a pretty easy place to get around if, like Leah, you don't have a car.
So not like anywhere in America.
Correct. On its face, nothing indicated that Leah was planning on running away or was in danger of becoming victim to foul play. She wasn't fighting with her family or having trouble at work or, you know, doing drugs or being hassled by anyone, like any of those typical, like, risk factors that you see. You know, she didn't really have any of them. She just, like, lived at home and went to work and hung out with friends occasionally and read books, like, you know, pretty standard. It was really only with hindsight that Leah's family was able to see that things had been a little bit different in the months leading up to her disappearance. But before we get into all of that, let's get into the actual timeline. There were a few events leading up to her disappearance that could potentially offer clues, so I'm going to start with those. On Saturday, February 2nd, 2019, Leah asked her father for a ride to the Jury's Inn. She told him that she and a few friends were going to have a girls' night out and get a hotel room. And this wasn't something that like Leah really did, but it was something that young adults in the area did in general. So it didn't like strike her family, you know, as being completely out of character or a weird thing for her to do or suspicious or anything like that. Thursday, February 14th, 2019, so, you know, just a couple of weeks later, the day before her disappearance, you know, it was also a pretty standard day. Leah went to work as usual and returned home around 6 p.m. But of note, and obviously they didn't know this at the time, but on her walk home around 5:45 p.m., the location settings on Leah's Samsung phone were turned off in the Fertzen Lake area. So Milton Keynes also has like a lot of like small bodies of water around it. And Fertzen Lake is one of them, and it's one that's on her way between, you know, home and work. So her location settings were turned off, and her phone company would later confirm that this had never been done before.
On Valentine's Day.
Yes, on her way home from work.
Side note, do they celebrate Valentine's Day in England?
Yes, they do.
I mean, that's like a made up holiday, so I just I don't know.
Yeah, no. Valentine's is a thing there.
Okay.
When Leah arrived home, she changed into tracksuit bottoms and a long sleeve t-shirt that said, "I solemnly swear I'm up to no good," which is a line from Harry Potter. It's on the Marauder's map.
Dork.
She told her mom that she was going to go out and see a friend. So Leah went on foot. And the one thing that's striking about this is it doesn't sound like she was wearing a jacket. The weather that evening, I mean, it's February in England. Like, this is not...
I have to imagine it's chilly.
Yeah, it's like not a pleasant time. You know, it would have been in the mid to high 40s at the time. And that's Fahrenheit. I don't know what Celsius would be because I'm American and we don't know things.
No, but that sounds amazing weather and I want to live there.
Yeah, but you would want a jacket.
Yeah, that's why I want to live there, because I fucking love jackets.
This dude has a lot of jackets.
It's the best accessory.
Yeah. So if, in fact, she was just wearing these track pants and the long sleeve t-shirt, which is, again, everything that I've read only says that, then she was a little bit underdressed for the weather. And also, you know, going back to the fact that it's Valentine's Day, you know, she's wearing very casual clothes. And I don't, obviously, you know, I don't know her. Like, I don't know what she would dress up for a date like, but it does kind of indicate that she maybe didn't have like a fancy date planned or anything like that. Because again, like, so her job, and we'll get into, you know, what she was wearing when she disappeared because she was on her way to work, but like she dressed pretty casually at her job in general. So it wasn't even so much like she was getting home from work and taking off like heels and, you know, like an uncomfortable dress or suit or something. Like she was wearing pretty like comfortable clothes already. So she like got super comfy, you know, when she got home.
Yeah.
So she got home at about 6 o'clock, you know, changed and then left pretty much immediately. But she returned home just over an hour later at around 7:15. So, you know, she also really wasn't gone that long at all. Now, when Leah returned home, Claire was making dinner, but Leah didn't want whatever it was she was making. So she ordered Chinese takeaway and like ate it upstairs in her room.
I also appreciate that she said takeaway.
I tried.
Instead of what?
Delivery or takeout. I honestly don't know if it was delivery or takeout, but the articles that I read did say Chinese takeaway. And I was like, you know what? We're going to go with our English friends' expressions here.
I'm sure that the rest of our listeners can figure out what that means, but I just wanted to point that out.
But the important part about this is that, you know, it also indicates that she didn't eat while she was out.
Right.
You know, so whatever she was doing for that hour and 15 minutes, it wasn't like grabbing a bite to eat with somebody, presumably. Leah's parents last saw her at 10 p.m. when they said goodnight and headed to bed. Again, you know, everything seemed normal. John and Claire both left for work early the next morning around 7:30, so they didn't see Leah before they left. You know, she's 19. It's not like they had to like get her up and get her ready. Like they do their own things in the morning. And, you know, she didn't have to be to work until around 9. So that makes her last official sighting, you know, in the flesh by her parents at 10 p.m. the night before.
last overall official sighting or just last sighting by her parents?
Last sighting by her parents.
Okay, so somebody sees her again later?
Well, kind of, and we'll get to that in just a second. But, you know, the thing that struck me about that is technically we don't know if Leah stayed home all night or if she left at some point.
Okay.
So the next and last confirmed sighting of Leah was at 8:13 a.m. on February 15th, walking along Buzzacott Lane in Ferdston. This location and timing was consistent with her walk to work. She was wearing black skinny jeans, black Converse high tops, a gray zip-up hoodie with a Stuart B. Taekwondo Club logo, and a black quilted coat. She was also carrying a small black backpack. And this is also very consistent with clothing that she would normally wear to work. There's also CCTV footage of Leah arriving at work the day before, and she's wearing a very similar outfit. Because of this, it is believed that she did spend the night at home and set off for work the next morning as usual. Yes, we don't 100% know that she spent the night at home, but like the timing of where she was on CCTV is very consistent with her walking from her house to work. She's wearing the clothes that she normally wore to work. She's taking the stuff that she normally takes with her to work. Like, it just seems normal.
The fact that her parents can confirm what she was wearing on Valentine's Day, mm-hmm. and then she's seen wearing something different.
Right, yeah.
And I understand it doesn't take that long to change. However, like, that's it all adds up to consistency of it being a normal night, going to bed, waking up the next day, getting ready for work, and going to work.
Yeah, absolutely. So, as I mentioned before, Leah was due at work at 9 a.m., but she never arrived. Leah's work called her family toward the end of the day when they were unable to reach her.
How far away was the last known location on CCTV to work?
So we have kind of like a map that we'll post online. But I mean, I think, you know, the whole journey was 2 miles. So I think she might have been, you know, close to the halfway point, but closer to her home than work. At that time.
Also, thank you for saying miles to me. I understand that our the rest of the world that listens to this is like, what the fuck is a mile? But
no,
like,
England is miles.
It is.
I learned that watching one of those Harlan Coben shows that was set in London. Because I honestly, I posted something about it on Twitter and I was like, why are they talking about miles?
Wait.
Yeah.
So England is the metric system except for units of measurement for distance?
Yeah, I guess.
They don't use kilometers?
No.
What?
I have no idea.
I don't understand that.
I know. I'm sure we're going to hear from a lot of English people be like, oh my God, yeah, I knew Americans were dumb.
But we are super, super dumb. Yeah.
Like, I've been to... The fucked up thing is that, like, I've been to England and did not realize that.
Yeah,
until I was watching like that Harlan Coben show and I was like, why does that
we've been
like,
to different parts of Europe and
yeah.
It's all kilometers.
Yeah.
So
maybe it has to do with like them not switching over to the euro. Like it's like they're using pounds and miles.
Sure. I don't think this has anything to do with Brexit.
It's probably Meghan Markle's fault, right? Did I score points with the I love Meghan Markle, honestly.
Well, now they don't. Now we just lost all of our listeners.
I know, right?
In England.
So anyway, so Leah's work ended up reaching her parents, I assume, because they're listed as, you know, emergency contact or whatever. And, you know, Leah had been working there for a super long time. I want to say it was around 7 months or something like that. But, you know, like she wasn't just the type of person who would not show. And again, when they tried to call her all day and couldn't get a hold of her, they were worried. So they contacted her parents, were able to get a hold of them. And so their first thought, again, because this is not like Leah, wasn't like, oh my God, she ran off or she blew off her job or, you know, like whatever. They thought, oh, she probably is sick and like is home in bed. So they went home, you know, expecting to like find her and, you know, maybe take her to the doctor or help her out or whatever. But when they got there, they found that her room was empty and her bed was made. Leah's parents, you know, kind of waited around a little bit, but when she did not come home and they also could not get a hold of her, they did report her missing that evening. Even though she's an adult, it does sound like the police started the investigation pretty quickly. By February 17th, so really less than 48 hours after she was reported missing, they put out a press release about her, you know, saying that this woman was missing and asked the public for help. Investigators also immediately started pulling CCTV footage along with Leah's phone records. By the 19th, they had released the CCTV footage to the public. So that sighting at 8:13 a.m., that video was released. They also determined that her phone had been switched off at 8:34 on the morning of the 15th, just about 15 minutes after she was last seen on camera. Interestingly, this happened around Furston Lake, which is the same area where her location services had been turned off on the 14th. After Leah's information was put out to the public, the tips started coming in. Three different witnesses reported seeing a woman fitting Leah's description on the morning of the 15th after she was last seen on camera. One said that they saw a woman typing with two thumbs on her cell phone by Furston Lake between 9:30 and 10 a.m. Two other witnesses who were walking by the lake reported seeing a woman who looked visibly upset and was crying between 10 and 10:15. They saw the woman again about 20 minutes later and said that she seemed a lot calmer at that point and was talking on the phone. The third sighting was at a different lake, Teardrop Lakes, which is near Knoll Hill, which is closer to Leah's office. And this sighting happened just after 11 a.m. Now, these sightings have not been confirmed. So the last confirmed sighting is that CCTV footage at 8:13. But if they were Leah, obviously that's extremely interesting for a couple of reasons. One, she could not have been talking on her phone, or I mean, technically, she could have, but she would have had to switch out the SIM cards.
Oh, right. Because you said that the investigators found that the phone had been turned off.
Yeah, at 8:36.
Not just the location services, no, but the phone whole phone itself was turned off.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah, at 8:36. So any phone calls or texts that she would have sent after 8:36 would have either been on a completely different phone or on her phone with a different SIM card. And it would also indicate that Leah, for whatever reason, chose not to go into work that morning. The second sighting also indicates that she was having some sort of problem, you know, because they said that the woman was crying and seemed upset. But none of her friends or family have come forward to say that they had spoken with her that morning. So if it was Leah and she was talking to somebody and having, you know, I mean, regardless of what the conversation was, whether it's a happy or sad or what's the weather conversation, nobody in her life has come forward and said that they were on the other end of that phone. Police continued to investigate and did a search of Furston Lake since so much of this story seems to center around that body of water. But no evidence related to Leah was found. As investigators and family continued to talk to people and dig into Leah's phone records and bank statements, they found out that Leah had some things she was hiding. So remember that girls' night out I mentioned on February 2nd?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turns out that that wasn't exactly what was going on that night. When Leah's bank records were examined, it showed that she actually left Jury's Inn and walked over to the less expensive Travel Lodge hotel where she checked in and paid for the night. But she didn't do this with her friends. When interviewed after her disappearance, all of her friends said that there was never a girls' night out. Like, they had no idea what anyone was talking about. They were not with Leah on February 2nd at the Jury's Inn, at Travel Lodge, anywhere. They did not see her that night. So who was she with? Or was she with anyone? Unfortunately, by the time all of this was discovered, the CCTV footage from the travel lodge was already gone.
Already gone. What does that mean? That they don't keep records past like 24 hours?
Yeah, or a week or 2 weeks or, you know, 30 days, whatever it was.
That seems suspicious.
Yeah, I don't know, honestly. I mean, yeah, given the fact that this is 2019 and everything lives in the cloud, like, why?
Right, yeah. It's not like, you know, when I first started in law enforcement, I was still switching out VHS tapes,
right, yeah.
That only covered an 8-hour period.
Yeah, exactly. You know? And, like, you don't have the physical storage for, like, every 8 hours since the beginning of time.
Yeah, right.
Like, you gotta record over that shit at some point.
Yeah, so this is a little different. Like, there's really no excuse for CCTV footage to be deleted.
Yeah, I don't know.
Or at least within that quickly of a time period.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. And what I do find interesting about that is, like, I do think that this hotel thing could potentially be very important. And police, you know, the only thing that has been said publicly about this is, again, that the CCTV footage was gone, but police have never said whether or not they interviewed staff members, you know, if they were able to find out any other information about Leah, if they made I haven't seen any public appeals specifically for people who were staying at that hotel that night. Obviously, Travelodge is not going to give out, like, guest names and things like that. Like, we all know that, whatever. However, you know, police have made several appeals, and some very specific, saying, were you here at this time on this day? Let us know, because they're trying to piece this together, but they've never made one for the Travelodge on February 2nd, which I just find kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that actually means that that's kind of where the center of their investigation is.
What do you mean?
Well, if they think something nefarious or odd happened at the Travelodge, and there's some information that they don't want leaked out to the public centered around that, that they're not going to ask for information about the Travelodge.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, the only issue I have with that is that this was found out 3 years ago. It doesn't sound like the police do have any leads. Like, they've said multiple times that they don't really have leads in this case. They don't have a suspect. Like, I don't know. So she wasn't with her friends. Who could she have been with? Well, it turns out that there may have been a secret boyfriend in Leah's life. The summer prior to her disappearance, Leah was allegedly dating a coworker. No big deal. But this coworker was 27, you know, so, like, a good 8 years older than her, and she's 19, like,
not the best.
Not the best, but even worse, he was engaged to somebody else.
Okay.
Yeah, the coworker has been named, and listen, like, as we've learned from a very high-profile celebrity trial, libel laws in United States and England are very different, but this coworker has been named in several news reports over there as Adnan Chowdhury. Now, Leah's family has been asked by police not to name him for legal reasons, so he is often referred to as Mr. X in articles.
Okay.
In October of 2019, Leah's mother spoke to The Sun about this whole thing, this, you know, possible relationship, saying, quote, "It started in the summer of last year. She was talking about this man all the time. It was X this and X that. It was obvious she had a soft spot for him. She'd go and see him in the evenings, paying £13 each way for a taxi. It just wasn't like Leah to do things like that. She'd always been such a home-loving person and didn't like going out much. Then we found out he was engaged, and it sounded like it was an arranged marriage. I remember saying to Leah, 'Don't you go falling for him. He will never be yours.' I was under the impression that she'd stopped seeing him then," end quote. Chowdhury, being one of Leah's coworkers, was interviewed early on. He was also interviewed about this relationship, which he denied. He said that they were just friends. And to his credit, the police said that he has given a detailed statement and has made himself available whenever they have asked. But also, a lot of people were not buying it. Not her parents, not internet sleuths, and most importantly, not her brother, Hayden.
Yeah, okay. He's going to deny it. Of course he's going to deny it.
Well, exactly, right? Like, I mean, even if that's it, what it was, they had a relationship. He had nothing to do with her disappearance or anything like that. Yeah, he's not going to admit to cheating on his fiance, who, by the way, I believe by this point was married.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, like they got married, you know? So they, I don't know if they were married at the time of her disappearance, but they were married, you know, sometime around then. Yeah, so whatever the relationship actually was between Leah and Adnan, Hayden absolutely believed that it was A, romantic, and B, inappropriate. He was so against this whole thing that he allegedly started harassing Adnan at the beginning of February, which would have been before Leah disappeared. And if this is true, and again, I haven't gotten 100% confirmation that it was the beginning of February. I will get into that a little bit more. But I mean, that's really big because one, it shows, you know, like I said, Hayden and Leah were very close. And Claire, her mom, you know, had thought that this had been over for months. So if Hayden really was harassing Adnan before Leah went missing, like that's a big deal. That proves that, you know, I guess it probably wasn't over and that Hayden knew about it.
Yes, it proves those two points, but it doesn't necessarily prove anything about her disappearance.
Oh, no, not at all. I just think it bolsters the theory that there was an actual romantic relationship.
Sure. Yeah. And that it was going on longer than what people thought.
Exactly. So there's a big Facebook group about this disappearance called Leah Croucher Disappearance Community Investigation. And, you know, I joined and I asked about this because I was like, did the harassment start at the beginning of February?
Previous to her disappearance.
Yeah. And Natty Forsyth, who is a moderator in the group, and I believe is Leah's aunt, I think she might be John's sister, she replied and said, quote, "It was reported as such. We are led to believe, however, it was both ways, though H.C., Hayden, did not involve police in his incident. The place of work were the ones that took action. It is reported by a contact of Mr. X," end quote. So it sounds like she's getting this information from one of Anan and Leah's co-workers or like friends or something like that. Hayden was apparently harassing Anan at work and Anan apparently, you know, fought back or whatever. Though I don't believe, you know, anything was like physical. But since it involved Adnan's place of business, this whole thing escalated in May of 2019. And like she said, it sounds like it was actually, you know, the workplace that kind of escalated this to a police matter. On May 13th of 2019, Hayden posted to Facebook, quote, "Was supposed to have court today as I'm attacking Leah's ex-boyfriend, 27 years old, married and Muslim, who in our opinion groomed and mistreated her. He had MK Finest in his name. He fucked with the wrong people," end quote.
What does that mean?
Yeah, that took me a really long time to figure out. But MK, Milton Keynes, where they live, apparently one of his screen names on, like, I don't know if it was Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, whatever, was MK Finest. At some point.
Okay.
All right. And that's, I think that's all that's referring to.
Okay. Yeah. Although, I didn't know what the hell that meant.
Yeah, me neither. I was like, I read it several times and I was like, I do not know this. But yeah, that's kind of what I pieced together.
Got it.
So Hayden had to go to court and face charges of harassment.
Is this court date after she's already missing?
Yeah, this is in May of 2019.
Okay.
And that's where this whole beginning of February comes from. It comes from the court case because he was charged with harassment between February 1st and April 30th of 2019. So I don't know if they're just like saying the whole month just rounding up or whatever, or if truly he was harassing Adnan at work, you know, in the first 2 weeks of February. I don't know. And again, that's we just haven't been able to get that 100% nailed down.
Gotcha. So it's important because if the harassment was going on previous to her going missing, then that actually creates motive.
In what way?
So if family's harassing him,
mm-hmm.
Adnan, and it's bringing attention to this inappropriate relationship,
mm-hmm.
when his life is going in a certain direction, that creates motive to end that person, cut that person out of his life.
Right.
Right. So that is actually motive. However loose you want to call it, that's motive for something nefarious.
Yeah, I can see that. But I can also see that, you know, her disappearance kind of brought more attention onto him too, you know?
Yeah, sure. But, you know, people don't think things out.
Very true. 100%
when they're going through things like that. So here you have an arranged marriage, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you get into a relationship with somebody much younger, a coworker, and then their family starts harassing you, saying, like, you're engaged, you're about to be married, what are you doing, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. That sets up, like, okay, what are my options? And, you know, those are the other options. I'm not saying that's what happened. I'm just saying,
no.
Like, it creates motive.
Yeah, yeah. So when Hayden ended up going to court in May to face these charges, you know, the judge was sympathetic, but he was also like, you can't just harass this dude at work. He said, quote, you and your family are entitled and deserving of utter sympathy from everybody because Leah has gone missing. I cannot go into the details of the police investigation, but can tell you it is being controlled at a very high level. It is detailed, and if I respectfully say so, they really are trying desperately hard. You must allow them, however strongly you feel, to do the investigating. You will jeopardize their investigation if you get it into your head that somebody is responsible for it. The police have fully investigated the person that you suspected. There is, at this stage, nothing to support these suspicions. Can I plead with you to behave so that police can complete this investigation? I would love to say with a happy ending, but I simply do not know. She is missing. End quote.
Well, just another reason why we need to move to England.
Why?
I mean, like, that's the most open and sympathetic thing that I've ever heard a judge say, like, ever.
Well, then you'll be interested in this next part. The prosecutors said that it wouldn't be in the public interest to send Hayden to jail or anything like that. So they just asked him to accept a voluntary restraining order.
What are we doing
here? I don't know. Yeah, so he did. He accepted that, and the matter was closed. They're like, you know, as long as you chill, like, you're good. Don't worry about it. Bygones.
Yeah, I mean, look, I have an inherent mistrust of the government, mostly because I work for them.
Yeah.
You know, I'll take what the judge and the prosecution say with a grain of salt. However, both of them working together, saying those things is not, you know, you're they're not covering up for somebody that's like wealthy or know, well-to-do in the community or whatever.
Well, blah, 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 blah. What I will say is there are persistent rumors that that Anand, like, you know, has family members that are like cops and judges and things like this. They've been mostly shot down because somebody's like, he has police officer family in India, like, that has nothing to do with anything here. But people are like, well, he knows lawyers. I'm like, well, so does everyone. Like, I don't know. Yeah. But anyway, but what I will say is that, like, one of the theories is that he is connected in some way, and okay, that's why, well, he's not being investigated. Sure, you know, whatever.
Sure. I mean, look, if you went missing, I'm sure the rumor mill would be going around the same way, saying, like, oh, I'm law enforcement connected, so it must be a conspiracy because I'm...
Oh, that people, like, if you didn't go to prison, yes, for my murder, it would be because of
because of my connections in law enforcement. Yeah.
I mean, I would also believe that.
That's great, except you understand that I know nobody locally
who would actually like help you.
Yeah. I know zero law enforcement within probably 40 miles of my job or 40 miles of my home.
Yeah. Yeah. Though the matter was legally closed, and you know, it was like, honestly, it just does seem like one of those things where they're like, we can't just let you do this, but we're not trying to ruin your life over it either, because we empathize with what you're going through. The issue wasn't closed for Hayden because, again, he still had these suspicions. His sister was still missing. He didn't have any answers. And he felt powerless to do anything about it. Hayden had previously dealt with depression, and, you know, this whole situation obviously made it a lot worse. On November 14th, 2019, Hayden hanged himself. His mother, Tracy Furness, and his sister, Jade, found him in his apartment. He was still alive and was rushed to the hospital. But his condition deteriorated over the next few days. His parents made heartbreaking posts on Facebook with his mother saying in part, quote, on Thursday, 14th of November, my son felt so alone, so lost, so broken, that he felt he had no other choice other than to take his own life. Hayden was so consumed with pain and anguish, and despite the love around him, it wasn't enough. His mother's love and that of his entire family was not enough, end quote. His father, John Croucher, said in part, quote, what kind of life is it that you can speak to your son on Thursday evening to reassure him that we all feel the same sadness at Friday 15th approaching? 9 months with no news about Leah is a terrible thing to face. We promised to meet up the following day so we can face it together. Hours later, police knock at the door and tell you that Hayden is fighting for his life, end quote. Hayden himself had previously written on social media, quote, she will never die. She may be physically gone, but I will continue to talk about her, write about her, think about her, laugh about her, and cry about her. My children will know about her, love her, feel her in their very bones. I will live for her, end quote. Unfortunately, it wasn't enough, though. On Sunday, November 17th, 2019, Hayden Croucher passed away in the hospital with his parents and sister Jade by his side. He was just 24. The Croucher family has been hit with two unimaginable tragedies within 9 months. And to me, if there was any possibility that Leah had just taken off on her own, that possibility went away with Hayden's death. They were so close, and I cannot imagine a world in which Leah was free and like aware of what had happened and would just continue to decide to stay away. All right, so what happened to Leah? There have been several unconfirmed sightings in the 3 years since her disappearance and, you know, even more theories bandied about. One theory, of course, is that she just took off. You know, that's always the first one whenever an adult goes missing.
Hoagie.
Yep. Good old Hoagie. But this was bolstered by the fact that, you know, she went missing from a pretty busy area. So if there had been some sort of stranger abduction, like somebody would have noticed.
Yeah. Sure, but I mean, like, you know, we've had cases where there was actually stranger abductions from busy areas.
Right, and nobody did notice.
And nobody noticed.
Yeah, so. No, I mean, you're right. But those were of children, right?
Sure, also in America, not in England.
I mean, I don't, yeah.
maybe people pay attention a little bit more in England.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know.
But, you know, and people also point out that she was a black belt in Taekwondo, and, you know, because of that, she would have been able to take care of herself. But again, you know, it's like practicing Taekwondo is like very different from being attacked in the middle of a street. Like, you know, the skills may translate, they may not in the heat of the moment. Like, I don't know. I could see it going either way, honestly.
Did her brother practice?
He did.
What belt level was he?
There's like one picture that's been circulating of Leah and Hayden and their dad, John, all posing with their belts. Leah, in that photo, mm-hmm. Leah and John are black belts. He's like a green belt, Hayden.
Okay.
At the end of 2021, an internet sleuth was looking at Google Earth and saw what they considered to be a shocking image. Now, this image appears to show a young woman wrapped in a red blanket or something of that nature, hiding in an abandoned barn about 18 miles from where Leo was last seen. Now, even though this image wasn't like found by this person until the end of 2021, the image was captured by the Google Earth cameras in March of 2019. So very closely after Leo disappeared. So timing-wise, it could have worked out.
Or it could have just been the owner of the barn.
Well, it's an abandoned barn.
Okay. Or it could have just been anybody. You said it was 20 miles?
18.
Okay, 18 miles away from where she was seen, and a Google Earth image found it. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, how close are we talking about the image being?
Well, I'll show you the image and see what you think about it. But in terms of like the location, the distance, police actually had searched that property already, like initially. And, you know, when this came to light at the end of 2021, because again, the person who saw it did contact police with this tip, they went out there again and looked around, you know, but again, found nothing related to Leo. But here, let me find the image for you. Okay, so I'm showing this to you on my laptop because like looking at it on your phone is going to do no good whatsoever. So here's a picture of Leo and then the Google Earth image right next to it.
I mean, the Google Earth image doesn't even look like it's a person.
Well, yeah. So I read this whole like web sleuths thread on this, and a lot of, and I forget what the word is, but they kept on using the word. It's like where you see faces in things that aren't faces.
Right.
And they're like, yeah, I don't actually even think that's a person. Some people do. I mean, honestly, I've looked at it a lot. When I first looked at it, I was like, I don't even know what they're talking about. I don't see anything that could possibly be a person.
No, I can see something where it could possibly be a person, but it also looks like a fucking Cabbage Patch doll. Like that's not a fucking person.
Yeah, I have no idea.
It's ghost imagery that you're making shit up. Your eye is making shit up as it goes. That's what it is.
Yeah.
I don't see that. That's not a person. Like, okay, like, is Leo bald?
No, but I see what could be hair.
Could be.
Well, yeah.
Could also be a fucking alien.
Sure.
I'm just saying, like, that image, like, is not indicative of a human being. It just doesn't show anything.
At this point, I'm inclined to agree, but I think it's great that police actually went and checked it out.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I have no problem with them. No, look, I am not knocking the police in this investigation. Like, you know, they're doing their due diligence, but like for the rest of the internet sleuths or whatever, like, come on.
Yeah, I don't know. Now, another theory, of course, that we often see in cases of missing women is sex trafficking. A tip that was made about 6 months after Leah's disappearance was also just made public in April of 2022. It comes from a businesswoman who says that she saw Leo at the airport a few weeks after her disappearance in the company of a controlling Asian man in his 20s or 30s. This woman was apparently near the pair at passport control and was able to overhear parts of their conversation. She said that the woman asked the man where they were going, and he said that he'd tell her when they got there. He also said that she couldn't tell anyone that she was traveling with him. The witness even claims that she heard the woman give the name Leo at passport control, but, you know, obviously could not be positive that it was Leo Croucher. The interaction was weird, though, and it worried her. But, you know, she eventually just got on her flight and kind of forgot about it. The witness lived in Holland at the time, so she hadn't heard about Leah's case. It wasn't until she returned to the UK 6 months later that she saw all of the posters and banners about Leah's disappearance. And then she reported this potential sighting to police.
See, now that is more believable to me.
than a lady in a barn.
A mysterious alien-like image that Google image happened to capture, whatever. No, that is way more believable to me. So here you have a woman that goes out February 14th,
mm-hmm.
turns her location off on her phone, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then comes home. So assuming maybe the location turns back on, we don't know. Then the following morning.
No, I don't believe it does, actually. Okay. I think the location is turned off.
But
that
the phone
evening.
Stays on.
The phone stays on.
Right. So specifically the location services were turned off.
Right.
Right. And then the next morning, she's supposed to go to work.
Mm-hmm.
Does not make it to work. Okay. So then she goes missing. And then by going through the credit card receipts, we find out that she actually didn't stay where she was supposed to be staying at that night. She was staying at the Travel Lodge.
Yeah.
And there was no girls' night. So she was staying at this random ass hotel,
mm-hmm.
right? So to me, all of that, and she's young and impressionable. She's 19 years old. And all of this indicates grooming of some sort of behavior. Like the location service is being turned off on her phone. This is all indicative of stages of we're getting ready to go.
Right.
Right? Okay, so now we have a witness saying that, again, you know, potentially.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we have no idea.
Could be Leah at an airport. Like, that is way more believable to me than, you know, she just, like, went missing and is just, like, huddled in the barn.
Yeah, like, 3 weeks later or whatever. Yeah.
And Google Image just happens to catch it.
Yeah, I don't know. But, again, that, you know, like I said, it is one of those theories out there. Now, police haven't spoken publicly about this particular airport tip, but in January of 2022, Thames Valley Police's DCI Andy Howard said, quote, "There is no evidence to suggest that she has left the UK," end quote. Again, there is this sighting, but Leah's passport, birth certificate, any other paperwork was at her home. She didn't have any of that stuff with her, you know, so that's not to say she could have had a fake passport. But again, it's 2019. Like, it's a lot harder to get a fake passport and have it get through than
well,
it was
sure,
in
but
the
that
70s.
That wouldn't have been what Leah was doing. That would have been the controller.
Well, yeah, yeah, for sure. But I don't know. It just seems too... Like, with how electronic everything is now, it just seems, like, too difficult.
You don't think that happens in sex trafficking rings and things of that nature? Like, I think 100% there's... Look, if you create any kind of security measure or whatever, there's always going to be a force that figures out a way to bypass that security measure.
Okay, I'll give you that. However, if this individual, and again, I mean, this individual who was with Leah, like, probably wasn't the one who was coming up with how to get these,
no,
like, amazing passports
no,
and, you know,
was,
whatever.
He was the handler to get her out of the country.
Right, but, like, would he still be dumb enough to be, like, saying all these suspicious-ass things right by passport control?
I don't know.
Like, I don't know.
I don't necessarily believe that 100% either. I'm just saying it's way more plausible than, you know, she's just sitting in a fucking barn.
Okay, yeah. I mean, that's fair. So another theory, though. When I was reading one of the Reddit threads on this case, several people said that they believed, like, that all this behavior actually led them to believe that she had died by suicide. Several said that a lot of her behavior reminded them of themselves when they were in past depressive episodes and were perhaps feeling suicidal. The hotel room, for instance, their theory is that maybe Leah wasn't meeting somebody clandestinely. Maybe she just wanted to be alone. And one user was like, he said, "I actually did that exact same thing." He said, I lied to my family about where I was going. I checked into a hotel, I lied down on the bed, and I just thought about how I was going to kill myself. And Leah is said to have struggled with anxiety, but, you know, maybe there was more to it. You know, again, her brother clearly dealt with depression and suicidal ideation and things like that. The problem with this theory, to me, is the same one that we ran into in the Mandy Stokes case. Like, how do you kill yourself and then dispose of your own body?
Right.
You know, it's been 3 years at this point, and no sign of Leah has ever been found.
Yeah, exactly.
It just, without her body being found 3 years later, it's one thing if we're talking a month down the road, but, you know, even that is stretching. But sure. 3 years in a small area where people have been thoroughly searching for her, and she was on foot, and, you know, granted, she could have gotten into a car driven by somebody else. Like, who knows? But again, if it was just suicide, why would nobody say that they gave her a ride that day?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. There are a lot of issues with it. So another theory is the boyfriend, which you kind of brought up already. A lot of people on various forums, though, have been throwing around the term honor killing. Which, in my opinion,
no.
Yeah, it's just generally racist.
Not going to do it. Yep.
No, yeah. No. So we are absolutely not going to go down that road.
Look, no, and what I brought up was not at all honor killing.
No.
It was very much like driven by specific reasons, and it was to say honor killing, that is insanely racist. So
yeah.
Like, hey. The motives behind quote unquote honor killing is like every fucking murder in the world.
Right,
you're just pigeonholing it to one specific race or ethnicity. And that's bullshit.
Right. Like the Muslim religion did not invent intimate partner violence. Like,
no. Yeah. That's just existed.
Yeah. That's just men.
Yeah. It doesn't matter what ethnicity or religion or anything else. Yeah. It's like, you know, if you're a fucking asshole and you're going to fucking kill somebody because it doesn't fit in with your sexual orientation or sexual behavior at the time, like
that is life or your future, your plans.
Yes. That has nothing to do with any broader spectrum bullshit that you're going to bring into it. That's not honor killing. That's just fucking murder.
Right, right. Like, it's just being like a shitty dude.
Yes, exactly.
Like, yeah. So, yeah, so I do, we do want to make clear that, you know, as we do discuss these different theories, like we, you and I, hosts of this podcast, are not at all going down that road. So getting away from like that terrible label, you know, people say that Leah was murdered either by Adnan or his family because the relationship brought shame upon them since he was engaged to another woman. It makes sense in any investigation like this to look at the person she might have had a relationship with.
I'm not excluding them as a suspect,
right.
But like, it's not
like that.
That it's not driven by those motives.
Exactly. Now, police, however, have ruled Adnan out as a suspect, saying that he has an alibi for the time of Leah's disappearance. Now, they won't say more than that, but it has been kind of, you know, back channel reported that he was verified to have been at work all day that day. So apparently he also wasn't driving at the time or didn't have a car at the time or something like that. So apparently a family member, it has been said it's his mother, I don't know 100%, dropped him off at work at around like 8:30. And he was there, you know, worked his normal shift, like nothing weird about that day from his perspective whatsoever. But many argue, because again, actual alibi details haven't been released, you know, their argument is like, how can we be sure his alibi is as strong as everyone seems to think? Like, did he go out to lunch? Did maybe he tell Leah to wait for him somewhere and then end up meeting her after work? Like, could a family member have actually been involved, you know, and while he was at work, a family member was doing something?
Sure. Could that Google image of an alien looking fucking thing be her also? I mean, I'm just saying, you're grasping at straws at this point.
Again, yes.
I'm not saying I'm saying in general.
Yeah.
Like, I get it, but the police aren't going to specifically let out what his alibi was. If they say he had an alibi, they're not going to be like, oh, he was eating a sandwich at Subway. If they think
that he's cleared. I don't want to say, okay, then he's cleared, because, you know,
I mean, come on.
I don't trust the police in England. I don't trust the police here either. So, but if they've ventured down that avenue, if they've gone to the extent of looking at the alien image in the barn,
they have.
Like, I have to believe that they've done their due diligence on an actual alibi of somebody that is a suspect.
Well, I'm actually going to talk about that, because not everybody agrees with that. You know,
not everybody agrees with my assessment of it being a fucking alien ghost image in a goddamn barn that's not her.
Okay. True. So, Leah's family, they have obviously gone back and forth on their own theories and beliefs. And if you read the articles over the last 3 years, you know, in one, they're thinking like she took off on her own. In another, they're thinking maybe, you know, somebody took her. Like, you know, they, yeah, of course, and
that's
like,
natural for them to.
Yeah, because like you're going to run through every single possible scenario, no matter the likelihood of it, right?
Yeah.
But by the one-year anniversary of their daughter's disappearance, John and Claire Croucher were saying that the police got it wrong. In an interview with their hometown paper, the MK Citizen, which, by the way, has done an impressively thorough job covering this case, they said that they believe the police should have looked harder at Chowdhury. John told reporter Sally Muir, quote, "Mr. X is the only anomaly that was in Leah's life. The only thing she lied about. We feel information he may have is our only chance of finding her. We kept quiet because the police strongly advised us it was the right thing to do. They asked us to trust them. We have to finally and publicly admit we think they are wrong." End quote.
I mean, that's not the only thing she lied about. She went to a hotel.
Right, but they think that perhaps she was meeting him, and perhaps that's why she lied about it.
Perhaps.
So, but by going by that theory, he is the only thing that she's lied about.
Sure, that's a theory being pushed by the thought process that he is the one behind it.
Right, which is, again,
we don't know why she went to the hotel.
Very true. And so I'm just saying,
I'm not on his side. I'm just saying, like, okay. Yes, he is the mystery, and he is worth pursuing. However, you cannot drive your entire investigation behind that as the only possible suspect or the only possible solution.
Right, but I think the point that they're making isn't that that's the only possible solution. It's that it's a relatively logical one that wasn't looked into enough by the police. I mean, I think that at this point, it's been a year. The Crouchers have probably gone over every single scenario 100 million times. And this is the one that they're coming back to as being the most reasonable in their opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you that. That makes the most sense. Sure.
You made good points about the sex trafficking angle.
Mm-hmm.
Because I am always quicker to dismiss sex trafficking when the person doesn't display a lot of the risk factors.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So like if we're talking about cases that we've covered on this show, Danica Childs,
mm-hmm.
I think 100% sex trafficking, like that is what happened to her. I do believe that there's a very good chance that she's still out there somewhere and is just caught up in that and unable to get out. But Leah just didn't have those same risk factors. And, you know, neither do a lot of the other women who we cover where this kind of comes up. And that's my only thing. And I think you make good points. But again, it's one of those, it's like, I feel like the simplest answer is usually the right one.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that's not to say that I'm completely convinced that it was this guy either. You know, there are a lot of reasons to say that he isn't involved, you know, not the least of which is the fact that he was at work all day.
Right.
The day she disappeared.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So like I get where her parents are coming from, and I understand their frustration, especially when, you know, the police are saying, like, please respect his privacy. You know, don't name him in the press, things like that. And they're like, okay, great, but my daughter's missing.
Yeah.
And I think objectively, when you're not in it like they are, you can step back and say, yes, well, he hasn't been charged with any crime. Like, he does actually deserve his privacy. Nobody really knows if he was even in a relationship with this woman, much less involved in her disappearance. But again, like, when you're the parents, when you're the family, I get it, you know? It's a lot harder to respect his privacy, or, you know, to feel like it's okay that the police aren't pressing him as hard as you feel they should be, or, you know, whatever.
Right.
But, you know, getting back to like the investigation into this potential relationship, it should be said that at the beginning of the investigation, Leah's phone records obviously were checked. I mean, we've talked about that before. They don't have her phone, so there's a lot that they don't have access to. But, you know, they do have access to her phone records, so they know who she called, who was calling her, who she was texting, who was texting her, et cetera, et cetera. And just based on that, no evidence of a relationship between her and Anand was found. However, she reportedly mainly used apps like Snapchat to communicate. Like more than texts.
Yeah.
Gotcha. You know, and those messages are automatically erased. Mm-hmm. So even if she wasn't actively trying to hide something, just by the nature of that, and even if they weren't automatically erased, Snapchat messages aren't saved in your phone records. You know, you right. can't call Verizon or Virgin Mobile, if we're being European about it, or whoever her phone carrier was, and like get her Snapchat messages or her Instagram messages or, you know, anything like that.
Right. Yeah.
So that definitely hindered the investigation. And because Anand had this alibi and, you know, denied having a relationship with her, et cetera, his phone wasn't checked.
Hmm.
And that's a big problem that a lot of people have with this investigation.
Yeah, I mean, of course, this is not the U.S. justice system, so I don't know how things work, but... You
listen,
know,
we've watched a lot of crime shows. We've watched like both seasons of Happy Valley.
Yeah. But there, I mean, there's like, they can't force him because there's no evidence.
I think it is anything. Similar to how it's here, right? If like you don't have probable cause, you can ask politely.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And they can say no.
Yeah.
You know? And my guess is that's kind of what happened here. I don't know if they even asked, honestly, but like regardless, he didn't volunteer it and they didn't have enough to make him compel it. Although in that same article that I was just talking about, the Crouchers did say that they provided police with evidence early on to prove that there was more to the relationship between Adnan and Leah than he admitted. Now, of course, they don't go into that proof because, you know, that's not going to help things, probably. I mean, maybe, but, you know, whatever. They don't go into it in the newspaper. They don't want to be sued, whatever. But they say that they gave proof. And so I think, you know, again, from their perspective, they gave proof that this guy's lying. The police still aren't pushing him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So John went on to say in that interview, quote, "We worried that the police did not look more closely at him, his family, his friends. They didn't search cars or homes or workplaces. They searched the area he lives in, but that was all. He will not give permission to look at messages between the both of you. He destroyed those messages. Police searched our house 5 times. They searched Leah's brother's home. They searched our relatives' homes. They searched our cars, our workplaces, our internet history. It feels as if we were under suspicion," end quote.
I'm sure to an extent they were, at least initially. And,
of course, as know, they should
they
be.
Were
I mean,
trying
honestly.
I'm assuming the police were trying to rule them out officially.
Right. And not that I'm saying that the Crouchers should be suspects any more than any family of a missing person needs
right.
to be investigated.
Yes.
Like, that just has to happen.
Yeah.
Regardless of who it is or what the circumstances are. But, you know, you had asked me earlier if they did look into the family, if they looked into Hayden, if they looked in, you know, to these people, and they did, but they did not look into this boyfriend, allegedly, who was engaged and then married. And, you know, it's just, it, I get it, but it, like, it does seem like he maybe should have been looked into more, you know? John even asked police to test the clothes that Anand wore on Valentine's Day, since Leah, you know, hadn't been truthful about her whereabouts that night. But police were like, no, we're not going to do that. And again, even if Anand wasn't responsible for Leah's disappearance, even if he didn't have anything at all to do with it, the Crouchers still want him looked into more. Because even if they were just good friends, quote unquote, as he claims, like, were there other people that he introduced Leah to? You know, like, what was the nature of their friendship? If it was just a friendship, you know, did they hang out with other people? Are there other people that they don't know about who may know something, who may need to be interviewed, who, you know, could have information possibly? Anand also never participated in any of the searches for Leah or hung up any flyers or anything like that. Now, I should also say,
not that that shows guilt.
Of course not. But, you know, it doesn't look good to them. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, it doesn't make the Crouchers feel better about this guy, for sure.
Yeah.
And it should be mentioned, in fairness, that in this interview, the Crouchers claim that, you know, Anand never spoke with police. But again, as I said earlier, investigators have said that, you know, they have interviewed him. He's always made himself available. He gave a detailed statement, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So, you know, again, like, I'm just trying to be as fair as possible here. Because honestly, you know, I don't know. You don't, like, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
But I do think the Crouchers have a point here in terms of other possible people whom Leah could have been hanging around. You know, they know most of her friends. Again, like, she wasn't this, like, super social person where she has, like, a million loose acquaintances that they've never met or heard of. Like, they pretty much know who she hangs out with. But the fact of the matter is, Leah was keeping secrets from them. So was Anand the only secret? You know, was he the only one they didn't really know about? Or were there other people in her life who could provide more answers in this case that desperately needs them? Leah's family and those who are trying to solve her case are constantly working to keep her name out there. On February 15th of this year, 2022, the 3-year anniversary of Leah's disappearance, police released photos of a person around Furston Lake at 10:51 a.m. on the day Leah disappeared. Now, so if you remember, this is the area where there is a sighting of a woman who could have been Leah talking on the phone and acting upset.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so the photo itself is not great. And the person who could be Leah honestly just looks like a black blob. Like, it's just so far away, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, it's a person, unlike possibly the lady in the barn.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, so, you know, just a quick aside, we had some technical difficulties and we had to pause recording. So I was kind of like going through what we had already said. You were so angry about that barn picture.
Because it's not a fucking person.
Like, you would have thought that I told you this was going to be a 4-part episode with, like, the way in which you would not let that go.
Because it was just a blob in a photo. It's not a person.
Yeah.
It doesn't look anything like a person.
Right. Well, so this photo of this person at first, and like, definitely a person for sure. Could be Leah, but honestly could be anybody. It's just, it's so far away. It's from behind. It's a person wearing black, male, female, who knows, height, who knows, ethnicity. It's a question. So again, but what the police did is they released this because there are other people in the photos, right? So what they're hoping is that the other people who are kind of a little bit more recognizable will come forward and be like, oh, wait, you know, I was there that day. That was me. And then that person could say, oh, yeah, but that person over there is my neighbor who always comes and walks in the park at this time, too. You know, so they're hoping that by releasing this, they can just get enough people to kind of figure out what's going on that, you know, either they'll be able to identify everyone, but be like, oh, yeah, I don't know who that lady in black was.
Yeah.
Or be like, oh, wait, yeah, no, that's actually right. My other neighbor who, you know.
So then they can stop going back to that.
Exactly.
Photograph.
Exactly. Yeah. And rule out that sighting, you know?
Yeah.
DCI Andy Howard said, quote, I'm very keen to hear from anybody in the group of people in this image and particularly keen to identify and speak to the figure dressed in black. It may be that you regularly walked in this area back in 2019 and that you will recognize yourselves. You may have that vital clue or piece of information, end quote. And in fact, the day after this was released, a woman who was in one of the images walking her dog did come forward to identify herself. So, like, literally what they were going for happened. However, it's, you know, from what I've read, it seems like she might have been the only one, and it doesn't seem as though they've gotten any information beyond that. But again, like, it's a good area to
explore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
3 years on, the Croucher family's nightmare is ongoing. In addition to Leah's disappearance and Hayden's death, they've dealt with online trolling, with people on social media claiming to be Leah, with people cutting down her missing posters and throwing them on the ground, and even smaller indignities like Leah's bank not helping them cancel her automatic bill withdrawals, resulting in her bank account being emptied 2 years after her disappearance.
Why?
I don't know. But yeah, like, they're like, she doesn't need to pay these bills anymore. Can you please stop them? The bank's like, shh, it's fine. And so, yeah, so her bank account, you know, was empty. But the problem with that is that, you know, they were keeping her phone number active. And that bill was getting paid directly from her account. And so after the money ran out, the phone got canceled. And so they kind of lost that piece.
Right.
Now, the good news, again, because we're talking 2019 to now, which is 2022, and very few people at this point in history have phone numbers memorized. And we actually, Mason Smith, that was a case where they also kept his phone number active for a very long time because they're like, well, we know he knows that number. You know, he might not know any of ours, but he knows that one. And similarly, at least with Leah, she knew her dad's cell phone number because their numbers are very similar. So at least, you know, if she is somehow out there, she can still reach her father that way. But it's just like, it's just, I mean, insult to injury, you know, just like little things, like obviously not the most important thing that's going on with them right now, but just so frustrating.
Shitty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the Crouchers still fight because what choice do they have? In 2020, the Sun published a letter that Claire wrote to Leah in honor of her 21st birthday. We've linked the entire article, but it reads in part, quote, if I fall apart and go crazy, who will fight for answers? I need to hold it together for your dad, John, and sister Jade. They need me as much as I need them. Leah, I am making an appeal on your behalf to anyone reading this letter to please keep a lookout for you. It's more difficult now. People are wearing masks because of COVID, but please try to look for Leah. It was a busy time on the last day of school, the day after Valentine's in 2019. A memorable day. Did they see you, Leah? Did they see something small that they may not think is important, but could be an important clue? Did they hear you scream or hear a noise that might help locate you? No matter how insignificant the memory, I am asking witnesses to call the police if they have information that will help end our torment. Your loving mom, Claire. End quote. Someone out there knows what happened to Leah Croucher. Her parents have already buried one child. They deserve to know where their youngest one is. Leah Croucher has been missing from Milton Keynes, Buckinghamshire, England, since February 15th, 2019. Leah is a white female with brown or auburn hair and blue eyes. She is 5'2" tall and sometimes wears glasses. She was last seen wearing black skinny jeans, a gray zip-up hoodie, black high-top Chuck Taylor sneakers, and a black coat. She was 19 when she went missing. She would be 22 today. If you have any information regarding the disappearance of Leah Croucher, please call 101 and ask for Thames Valley Police, quoting reference 431-900-49929. Alternatively, contact Crime Stoppers anonymously on 0800-555-111 or through their online anonymous form at crimestoppers-uk.org. You can see all the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook, and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketza. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. It prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
I'm not exactly a tech genius, but I knew one thing for sure. If I wanted my small business to crush it, I needed a website that worked like a pro, and I needed it yesterday. Lucky for me, Bluehost made it ridiculously easy. With their AI design tools, building my website was a walk in the park. I could customize, optimize, and monetize everything exactly how I wanted. In just a few minutes, I had a secure site up and running. I couldn't believe how straightforward it was. And getting found online? Bluehost helped me with that, too. I perfected my keywords and meta descriptions with their search engine tools. The AI even gave me suggestions to improve my pages. Now I can sit back, relax, and focus on my customers, while my website continues to rank higher and higher on Google. With their 30-day money-back guarantee, I wasn't worried about taking the plunge. And now I'm so glad I did. Head over to Bluehost.com and build something special today.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.